So a few quips to start, set the tone for this message. There is a wealthy executive talking to an admirer. The admirer said, "You're the richest man I know." To which the rich man replied, "Yes, but I'd trade it all for more." Another one, there's an old story about a guy who was buried in his Cadillac. One of the mourners at the graveside was so impressed, he said, "Now that's living." So there's a third one here. "Then I looked on all the works of my hands that my hands had done, and on the labor which I had toiled. Indeed, all was vanity and grasping for wind. There was no profit under the sun." That one, of course, goes over like a lead balloon because it's not that funny. That is, of course, from Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 11. I recall when my younger brother and I, who most of you have met, now lives near Austin, we were younger. My dad had a shop. We repaired starters, alternators, and stuff like that for mostly cars and agricultural equipment. It was about a mile and a quarter from our home, and it was kind of the deal that was worked out between my mom and my dad. We were homeschooled, but then during our lunch break from school, we'd go to the shop and we'd work for a few hours, then we'd go back home and resume our day. Well, once upon a time, my brother and I were a little chunky, and as a remedy, we would run to the shop and run back, jogging. But my brother had this really annoying habit, and you could probably argue he just had better peripheral vision than I. But as we're running, he would always run just a little bit in front of me, which annoyed me, because I was not about to be outrun. So I would run faster, and he would run faster, and I would run faster, and before you knew it, we were both at a dead sprint and nigh unto death. It really kind of took the fun out of, not that jogging is fun to start with. But when I think back on that, it seems like a pretty decent analogy of a term that was the subject of a comic strip that you guys probably have heard of. In 1913, the first installment of this comic strip, titled Keeping Up with the Joneses, was first printed. It was created by Arthur Mormont. It parodied the American domestic lifestyle and highlighted the increasing drive towards something that some people would call conspicuous consumption. The title of today's sermon would be The Folly of Stuff. And since it's the pagan holiday season, we could just call it the jolly folly of stuff, just because it's more fun to say. Keeping up with the Joneses has evolved to an idiom over the last 110 years and can now aptly be described as spending money you don't have to buy things you don't need to impress people that you don't like. It is said that in this world, people don't respect you for accumulating wealth, they respect you for spending it. Most people who seem rich have very little wealth. And I witnessed this firsthand when my wife and I, before we moved to South Texas, we lived in Northwest Arkansas. Before I went to school full-time, I was going to school part-time, and I was working as an HVAC technician in the Northwest Arkansas area, which, if you're not aware, there's parts of it that are very affluent because it's the headquarters for Walmart, Tyson Foods. There's a whole plethora of large corporations that have call that area home. And in that region, there's a very prominent golf course. Pinnacle Hills is the name of the community. And I think the WPGA hosts some of their tournaments there and things like that. So we would be in and out of these communities working. Pinnacle Hills, so far as I know, as hearsay to me, but I had it on good authority, the HOA, which is the housing authority, fee to own your property in the Pinnacle Hills development was a cost of about $30,000 a year. A lot of money, as in more than what most people spend on a mortgage. If you own your home, you're still responsible for paying that much just to own it in that location. And you notice some of it inside of that. You know, some you could tell some people had money, some people wanted to look like they had money. But then there was several developments around which were full of these people that did not have money, but really were trying hard to appear to have money. They were very unpleasant people. I will, as someone working in service in their home, I have some interesting experiences that gave me the conclusion that wealth is more than, there's a little bit more to wealth than meets the eye, because the eyes can be easily fooled. But let's paint a picture now of how I see things currently. This would be like a through my eyes sort of perspective. I'm driving home on the road alongside $60,000 Toyota Tundra or Toyota 4Runners and $70,000 F-250s. And I promise I didn't actually pick that because Gabe has a Tundra and an F-250. That occurred to me just now. Chances are many of these drivers pull off of the highway, park in their cars in the driveway of their 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000 square foot home that they don't own. The bank owns it. They sit on their finance couch after grabbing a beer out of their refrigerator that they're making payments on, and browse social media on the latest phone that they buy under contract, seemingly all the while with a smile on their face, not hardly a care in the world. Meanwhile, I'm rattling down the road in my 17-year-old diesel with droopy headliner, and I'm driving on the same roads, going to my house. It's not very big. It's filled with appliances and furniture, most of which was bought used off of Facebook Marketplace. I can't help but wonder, am I a fool? Am I doing it all wrong? This doesn't make any sense. My wife and I have made a concerted effort and have made many sacrifices over the years to achieve the financial stability that we feel like we have today. But if stability can be photographed in a driveway and happiness is the estimated home value on Realtor.com, it just seems like we are sacrificing our foot for a new pair of shoes. Which, I was thinking about this after I wrote this and while I was getting ready to come to services, and the thought crossed my mind, part of this is my problem. Part of this is thinking that, what was the term that popped to mind? It was, we're kind of like where I'm expecting like a payback. Like, I sacrificed so much and now, you know, surely they're gonna have to sacrifice at some point, and that's really not the point. It's not that anyone really has to suffer. But it just seems like I'm making the hard decisions now. And Dave Ramsey makes a statement, or his mantra is, live today like no one else so you can live tomorrow like no one else. And maybe time will tell. We'll see. But it just does seem like there's a great deal of people are very comfortable with debt, and maybe that's the difference. I'm not comfortable with debt. But anyway, back to what I wrote after a little excursion. In that time, in that sort of mind frame, I find it's helpful to turn to Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 16 and 17. Verse 16 starts out, "Moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there, and in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and wicked, and there is a time there for every purpose and for every work." Now, debt is not wickedness. That's a pretty strong thing to say, but the Bible does have many pointers or points that are made about debt, and it is something that, without getting into the depths of it, we're to avoid. But we can ask ourselves, what is the problem with a society where the typical person drives a $60,000 vehicle and has $100,000 of student debt while earning a $50,000 salary? A society where 60% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Well, here's one problem. 38% of divorces in America cited financial problems as the cause of the divorce. Another problem. Research has shown that people under stress from financial issues are 20 times more likely to attempt suicide than those who do not experience this type of stress. That seems like another problem. Back in Ecclesiastes, skipping down to verse 20, verse 20 says, "All go to one place. All are from dust, and all return to dust." This is referring to people, but it also applies to our possessions. Satan exaggerates. The trick of Satan is that he exaggerates the value of things that you don't have and undermines the value of the things that you do. He has been using this trick from the very beginning, and he's still using it today. Life could not have been more perfect than it was in the Garden of Eden. Yet Satan convinced Eve that the grass was greener elsewhere. You and I have things today we used to dream about. But after we got it, it became normal. And now, we're on a quest for a different high. Satan is a master of painting the perfect picture, and he uses the insatiable nature of our desires to always thirst for more and better. And the Bible's rife with warnings about this. Conclusion. The median cost of an existing home in the U.S. today is $410,000. That includes many markets that are different than our own. But still, $410,000 is the median. The grand American castle that is rumored to have inspired the writer of Keeping Up with the Joneses has become a crumbling ruin that recently sold at auction for about $120,000. 100 years from now, so that was built 110 years ago, and 100 years from now, it's 2123. Every one of us will be with our friends and families, resting in peace. Everyone in this room. Strangers will live in the houses we worked so hard to build, and someone else will own everything we have today. Most of our stuff will either be given away, thrown out, or destroyed. Even the expensive car that we bought will end up in a scrapyard, crushed, worthless, and forgotten. 100 more years in the future, our descendants probably won't know much about us or that we existed at all. Photos and records of our accomplishments become a part of history, then fade to insignificance, and finally, they too are forgotten. The lesson for us here in this message is that there is no eternal value in stuff. There is no eternal pleasure in the comfort that these physical things of this world can afford us. There is no lasting satisfaction in worldly accomplishments. We are instructed in Luke 12, verse 42 through 43, to be faithful and wise stewards. And this applies to all of the blessings that we have, and gratefully so. And the Lord said, "Who then that is faithful and wise steward, whom his master will make ruler over his household, to give them their portion of food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes." Now this, above all with this, we need to seek to be a picture of the instructions given by Paul in the first letter to the Thessalonians. First Thessalonians, it's chapter 2 and verse 12. We are to walk worthy of God who calls you into his own glory, kingdom, and glory. That is more important than anything that you can buy.